And we're back.
We're back.
Episode
4.
Can you imagine that? I mean, we've come so far.
I mean, four whole episodes.
It seems like just 4 weeks ago we started this thing. Here we are. So, episode 4, The Gamecasters. I am Ryan James.
I am Jeremy Pete.
And we are going to start off, as we always start off, with our what we played tonight.
We did. We played some games.
We did.
Two of them.
We kind of do the same thing. We were doing the same thing every week. We play one that's kind of a little bit longer. Not long, but, you know, a little longer.
A little more meaty.
And then the second one is just kind of supposed to be a shorter filler game, but you'll kind of find out what happened as we talk about it. So the first game we played was Suburbia, and we followed that up with a rousing four-player game of Ascension, Chronicles of the God Slayer. What did you think of Suburbia?
Well, I had this is probably my fourth or fifth play of it, so I do have some experience with it. But again, it's been years.
Oh, has it?
Yeah, it has been years.
So you probably played it when it first came out, maybe?
Yeah, around the same time. Yeah, around that time.
Okay.
Well, first and foremost, I love tile laying games, so that's kind of like the first thing that I go to when I'm looking at that game. It's a hex tile laying game, so pretty cool that way. What do you think of that part?
I do like the tile laying. I don't like tile laying as much, I think, because I know you like it a lot.
Yeah.
I do like it. Like, Carcassonne is fantastic. But I didn't really like Alhambra that much, you know? And I have Isle of Skye, and I played that, and I liked it, but the tile laying part wasn't the best for me. And that's not really also what I love about Keyflower, and that has a tile laying aspect too. But I agree with you, in Suburbia, I do enjoy that. Do you want to kind of explain how the game works a little bit? You've played it more than I have.
It's well, you're building a point scoring engine, essentially, which you're taking these tiles, you're assuming these tiles and building a city, basically. And those tiles, they give you either population or
income. Yep.
And that kind of increases as the game goes along as you add tiles to your city.
Yeah, so some tiles, usually the tile will give you an immediate effect. It'll either give you, because population is the points, so the most population wins. So a tile will give you population sometimes right off the bat, boom, you take it and you get it once. It also might increase your reputation, which is basically how much population you earn every turn. So there's an immediate effect of population, and then there's an ongoing effect that you can also get with tiles. And then there's the same way with money. Some tiles just give you money right away, right when you put the tile down. Okay. Other tiles actually increase your economic engine, you know, your income, and so then every turn you're getting money. So Jeremy's right. You're really building, and that's what my favorite part about the game is, which I'll explain in a second, is this kind of arc that it has. You start out really nothing. You're in a little tiny nothing borough, and then you grow into this big metropolis city with 5 airports and a landfill and restaurants or anything. I know you did, didn't you? So mechanically, do you think that the tiling was your favorite aspect, or do you like the the way the tiles are priced? Because at the beginning of the game, or every turn I should say, you pick a tile to put into your borough, and it's based on the farthest one to the right is the cheapest and the farthest one to the left is the most expensive. And so you pay a combination of that price, which is on the top above the tiles, and then you pay a combination of that plus the price on the tiles. So the tiles themselves aren't really, they're random. They come out randomly, the prices are set by the board where they're placed. Do you like that kind of thing? Or
I think that's an interesting mechanic in how they kind of shuffle through and how you acquire those. And I think that the tiling is really just one little part of the game. It's not the game.
Yeah.
You know, the game is really creating a combination of these tiles that increases income.
Yeah.
And, you know, population, which equals points. So you have to be careful about the tiling, but it's not as...
It's also, there's like a timing aspect. It's like, when do you stop building? Because the point track, which is the population track, you keep going up that population track each turn as you increase your population and reputation.
Yeah.
And there's these little red lines every so often on the score track. And once you cross those red lines, your population is growing. And so that's using more resources in the city, right? So once you cross those red lines, your population or your reputation and your income go down one.
Yeah.
So it's kind of tough to know.
You have to manage it.
Yeah, you got to like kind of balance and go up steady. But I don't know. I thought it was really, I like the game a lot. I think it's really cool. It's simple because on your turn, all you either do is you buy a tile and put it in your city, which, you know, gives you more stuff. Or you use one of these tiles that, one of these little tokens that doubles
what you already have built
on your one of your tiles. Yeah. So it's kind of, it's pretty simple in that way. There's not like a lot going on in terms of the mechanics. Now, there's a lot going on in terms of the tile powers, and that can get kind of tough to bookkeep.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's kind of a strong bookkeeping element at some point when you're like, okay, this tile gives me $2, and every other tile around that drops me down my reputation, but this one brings me up reputation. Oh, but you have tiles in your city that I use for this. So it can kind of get...
That's the only thing with that, with the game, that I don't really like that much. I kind of get, feel like I get lost a little bit.
You can also get screwed by the randomness a little bit. Yeah. Like, we all kind of did this game. So every game, there's three stacks of tiles. There's A, B, and C, and that's basically round one, two, and three, kind of. It's like the timer, kind of.
Roughly.
Yeah. So you only play each game with a certain number of the A tiles, B tiles, and C tiles. So there was a bunch that were in the box that we didn't use. And I like that because it makes the game variable. But what kind of stunk about it this time was I had a tile that I bought that said every office tile after this one gives me plus one income. Well, there was like no office tiles in the game. They were all just randomly in the box. Jeremy had an airport that said every airport you buy, or that's in the entire city, you get a reputation or an income or something. And all the airports were like in the box.
Or they came out or they the came last out and round.
Got discarded or came out in the last round. So it didn't really work. No. We played a four-player game of it tonight, and it didn't, I mean, it took a little while, but just two of the players were new, so there was some a little bit of AP, but they wasn't like they took forever or anything like that. And one of the guys, Rob, won by a pretty wide margin over the rest of us.
For most of the game, it kind of tightened up a little bit at the end.
Yeah, and the three of us, who second, third, and fourth, we were pretty close.
Yeah.
You know, until...
Until the end, and then I fell.
Until the end, but Jeremy tripped over his own face. Yeah. And, but no, it's good. So I really like it. It's not... I wouldn't put it in my top 20, my top 30 even, really, but I know a lot of people love this game. There's another game that's kind that for also by Ted Alsbach that's kind of similar to it, called The Castles of Mad King Ludwig.
Yeah.
And you've played that one, I think, right? I think now I like that one a little better.
Now that I've revisited Suburbia, I think the Castles game is...
It's lighter.
I kind of like it a little better.
People like Suburbia because it's a little more complex, but, I mean, building a castle is just really cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
So, Suburbia is good. I'd probably rate Suburbia a 7.
Yeah, out of 10. I'd be a little under that, maybe.
Yeah, I think we have slightly different, you know, rating scales. You're, I feel like, a little more... Like, a 6 is still good for you, right? Because you look at that, like, a 5 is average.
Yeah.
For me, I look at it like a 5 is bad. Oh, like, you're bad if you're a 5. Like, you're failing.
Yeah, bad is like a 2 or a 3.
Well, okay, yeah. For me, a 2 or a 3 is going to get fed to a fire. But so that was Suburbia. Again, a lot of people like it. I like it. There's a lot of things in there to like about it. It just doesn't really do anything. It doesn't, like, get my motor running. You know, it doesn't get my heart pumping. It's just kind of like, it's nice. And the cool thing at the end is you have this city that you've made.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. Even if you lose, you at least have this cool thing you've built. And that's what I like about a lot of Euro games. And a lot of people like that about games like Agricola and Caverna. You know, at the end, even if you lose, you have this cool farm with all these little animals. Yeah. You know, and this is kind of like that, where you have this big thing you've built up.
Yeah.
So that was Suburbia. Then Jeremy had the infinite wisdom to suggest that we play a blistering 4-hour game of Ascension.
It was supposed to be 30 minutes.
It was way longer than 4 hours. I've only played Ascension before three players most. And we played it 4 players tonight. And it's a quick game. I don't know what happened. I think it was
a shuffle of the deck.
Yeah, that which is my biggest problem, which we'll get to in a second. First of all, Ascension is a deck-building game. like Dominion, if anyone's played Dominion. But it's actually more like Legendary, Marvel Legendary, because you have money and fight, or attack, or whatever.
Yeah.
But unlike Dominion, you can fight and purchase as much as you can.
There's not the idea of actions.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you do as much as you can on your turn with what you have.
Yep. Yeah. And the goal of the game is to get honor, which are just these little jewels, which is points, right? Yeah. And so with each player you add, it takes more points to end the game. So this was 90 to end the game.
Yeah.
Wow, did that seem ridiculous. So the shuffle of the deck kind of screwed us. So what happens is there's five cards in the center from this one giant stack of, you know, cards that both give you money and that you can fight. So they're randomly shuffled at the beginning of every game. So the thought is you kind of buy the cards that give you attack and that give you money, and those kind of build up your engine. And then when the monsters come out, you can boom, boom, attack them to earn the points.
Yeah.
The most points that way, because that's how the game will end. But in our game, the monsters just, they didn't come out until the last two or three rounds. Yeah. The first, like, it was a joke. We were joking. The first maybe 30 minutes of the game, there was not one monster.
Yeah.
And so the score was like 2-3-4, you know, in 40 minutes, and we cut it down. We were like, okay, we're not going to get to 90 honor by next weekend.
We're like, let's play to 50, and then we're like, let's play to 40. 40.
And yeah, so it's really fun. It sounds like it's a terrible game. This was by far the worst play of it I've ever had. But I like the game. What do you think of the game itself?
I like it too. I mean, I'm a fan of the deck builders. I like Dominion. You know, it's on par with that. I think I like Dominion maybe a little bit better.
Yeah.
But I enjoy it.
I actually think I like Ascension better. But I think Ascension is prone to this more than Dominion is. You know, this has more of the, well, if the shuffle sucks, then the whole game is bad for everyone. Where Dominion, it's usually not, I mean, you know, it's not going to be bad for all four people at once. Somebody might get kind of screwed with their deck draw. I mean, it can happen. But I will say that I think I like Ascension as a game better. With two, it's really quick. It sets up way faster than Dominion or Legendary. That's the best part about it.
Yeah, you're not separating. Deck building
games usually take a long time. This one is just, you shuffle the giant stack.
Yeah.
You get your starting deck. And then there's like three other piles of cards you can always buy, and that's it. And then you're ready to go. And it sets up in 5 minutes, tears down in 5 minutes.
You really don't even need the player board. The board.
You definitely don't. No, you just. It's cool to have because it looks cool, but you don't. You don't need it at all. What do you think of the art? The art in this game is, a lot of people hate it.
I was unsure about it when I first saw it, like, just.
What is this?
Yeah, but it kind of grew on me, and I feel like as an artist, I'm looking at it and thinking, this is somebody has a little bit different style. It's not that polished fantasy artwork that you see everywhere, you know? It's different. I kind of like it.
I love it. I do. I love the artwork. I can usually see everyone's point of view on things. You know, I pride myself in looking at all aspects, and that's actually why it's hard for me to make decisions sometimes, because I always see both sides, and it's hard for me to make my own decision on things. With this, I do not understand at all why people don't like the artwork. I think it's beautiful. I love it. I think it's great. People hate it. They want new versions of it. I think there was a new, you know, they updated the art in some of the newer expansions, maybe, and people are a little happier. I think it's great. I love it. I think it's rich. It's lush. It's beautiful. I don't know. I like it a lot. It's very cool.
It has its own style.
It does. There was a complaint tonight from one of our guys, Rob, who said he thought the cards were too busy. The art on the cards, it was just difficult for him to understand kind of what was going on. I never thought that before.
I can see it, though.
Yeah.
I can see where he's coming from. It's a little, their color's a little more muted, pastel-y.
Yeah, they're definitely muted.
And I think maybe the layout of the cards may be prone to a little confusion.
Here, I just said it was lush and beautiful, and then I'm like, yeah, it's muted. No, it
but
is.
But I'm not
it
saying is. Muted in a bad way.
You're right. No, I agree with you. It is.
It's the kinda, color palette.
Maybe
is,
a little washed out.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But it's, I think that's the, the intention was to have it like that.
Yeah. You know? I don't know. I think it's cool. The game itself, I think, again, it's good. It's just, you know, it's just one of those, it's thematic and there's just luck involved because it's just random cards. So, and it wasn't even bad. I didn't think it was bad. It was just long. And we all kind of were like, it was late, you know, it's later in the game night. We're all kind of like, okay, this was supposed to be quick. And it just took too long. Yeah. It wasn't really a negative, you know, the game itself wasn't like, oh, this is not fun. I had fun with it. It was just a little too long. So,
yeah.
That would be my one detractor for that. But I would give Ascension a 7.5, maybe even an 8 on a good day.
I'd probably give it a solid 7.
Wow. That's like a 10 for you.
Maybe like a, I don't know, between 6 and 7.
He gives his own games that he's designed like a 4. And he's like, this is amazing. So that's game night tonight. Suburbia and Ascension. Check those out if you're interested in games that are just kind of middle of the road. Okay. <Just kidding. laughs> No, it's good to play those once in a while. I haven't played either of those in a long time, and they've been in my collection, you know, and I meant to, and I always want to, but
it was good to do.
They're both, it's funny, Suburbia, I'd say like, it was okay, but I don't think I'll get rid of it. I like it enough that I would, you know, would play it again, you know. It just doesn't blow my socks off or anything like that.
Definitely not.
Is that a phrase? Blow my socks off?
I think
knock
it is.
Knock my socks off? Kick my socks off.
Knock your socks off.
Knock my socks
knocks
off.
Knock your blocks off?
Does knock your socks... What does that even mean? Knock your socks off? Has anybody's socks ever just been knocked off?
Possibly.
Maybe if they're, like, not on your feet on the table. I knocked your socks off. Okay, whatever. Anyway, so, again, that's game night tonight. So, for tonight's episode, we wanted to talk about... Last week was The Art of Winning.
Yep.
Right? This week is... aptly titled by Jeremy, The Art of Teaching.
Yep.
So kind of all things teaching, right? Teaching how to play games in that kind of way.
Yep.
So we have, again, a lot of questions here that I think, you know, it'd be good for you to answer as we're kind of going through these.
Think about yourself.
Yeah. And maybe you can get some tips from this, because teaching is, it's one of those things I think a lot of people struggle with. Is teaching games and how to do it, you know. And I'm not saying we know how to do it better than other people, but you know, it's a good discussion to have, I think, because a lot of people struggle with it.
Yeah,
you know, because it is a very difficult thing to do.
It is.
So Jeremy's first question he's got here is, what makes a good teacher? What do you think makes a good teacher?
It's a big combination of things, really. But what first comes to mind with it is just somebody who is organized, can speak clearly, and who knows the material. I mean, those three things are probably prime there.
Knowing the material, yes. I mean, yeah, I would agree with that. I'd say being prepared, having kind of a basic plan of how you're teaching, which I'll talk about a little bit later. But I think almost more than any of that is being quick while being informative.
Yeah.
Because if you take a long time and explain every single detail, which can sometimes is necessary, but if you're just like, if you don't have a right plan, you're just taking forever and it's just like time is going by. Every like second that goes by, you lose them.
Oh, yeah.
More and more. And then they'll forget things, and then it just makes the experience bad.
Yeah.
So you don't really ever want to go into a new game, pretty much regardless of what the game is, with no plan, you know, with no strong grasp of the rules. Because I will tell you this, reading the rule book when you're teaching is like the biggest...
Oh, it's horrible.
It's like the worst thing you can do. You need to know the game, you know, I think, before you go into it.
Oh,
so
for sure.
I would say... reading the rule book while you're playing a game is what makes a bad teacher, which is your second question here. What makes a bad teacher? Which I would also say is guessing. I don't know. I think this is the rule. You know, just guessing at a rule.
Yeah, yeah.
Having no structure. A lot of people, I think, make this mistake where they start to teach a game and they just kind of go all over the place and bounce around. And that confuses the crap out of people. And I think that's a tough thing if there's no flow to it. You know, it's hard to stay engaged.
Yeah, it has to be systematic.
Yeah.
In its approach.
If you're confused, like you shut down, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep, and then obviously one of the biggest things that makes a bad teacher, I think, is missing a key rule. Yeah. You know, like missing rules is hard to overcome in the long game. I was playing a game. I'm not going to name names here, but I was playing a game with some people a couple of years ago, and it was a long game. And a friend of mine was teaching it, and another friend of mine was playing this certain strategy for like an hour and a half. He was playing this one strategy, not realizing that he wasn't really allowed to do this certain rule because the person that explained it just didn't mention this to him. So about an hour and a half, and maybe 2 hours into the game, he goes to take a move to like cash in on this strategy he had, and the guy teaching it was like, "Oh, you can't do that."
Oh, geez.
Yeah, and he was like, "Why?" And he's like, "Oh, that's this rule. You can't do that." And he was like, "Well, you never told me that." And he was just like, "Oh, sorry." You know, and it, you know, it wasn't really his fault. It was just, you know, it was one little thing he forgot to mention, but it that ended
can
up
end up being a big thing,
ruining his this other friend's experience of that game. And I felt really bad for him because I would have been just as angry. He was not happy. So yeah, I think that that is one of the things that makes a bad teacher.
I think also impatience too. On the teacher's end.
Being impatient.
Sort of forcing it through and not taking time throughout the game, or, you know, kind of assuming people know things.
Like,
and
I told you that. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that can be.
Not that I've run into that a lot, but.
How culpable do you think the person being taught is? Let me ask. So let me explain it this way. I'm teaching you a game. This kind of happened to Rob when we were playing Hansa Teutonica. I explained all the rules, and then we're playing. At the end of the game, you know, I was doing the scoring.
Yeah.
And remember, I was like, "Oh, I get a point for each of these," and he's like, "What? I don't remember that." Oh. And I was like, you know, and it didn't really matter in the end because I would have won anyway, even without those extra points.
Yeah.
But I mentioned that rule, but I guess I didn't keep reinforcing it. I didn't, you know, think to, you well, know, so it's like hard to, you know, it's hard on the teacher in that way. Cause like how culpable am I versus, you know, Rob there? Like he wouldn't know if he forgot that in the explanation, which maybe took 20 minutes, then he's not going to know to ask that question. So it's not on him, but I'm not going to know really that he doesn't know that rule, because I did say it, so I don't know what he does and does not know.
Well, sometimes there's a lot of little details that are hard to remember everything.
Yep.
You know, it's hard to remember everything.
I guess that plays into the learning curve of, you know, got to play games multiple times.
Yeah.
But that's a pitfall that can happen in teaching, definitely, and it happens a lot, you know. Yeah. There's a lot of responsibility, I think, on the teacher. You know, if you think about it, when you're being taught a game, all you're worried about is yourself. Right? You're teaching me how to play a game, so I'm zoned in on my strategy. But when you're teaching me, you're teaching Rob, you're teaching John, you're teaching, you know, whoever's playing with us, and you're kind of worried about everybody.
Yeah.
Do they know the game? I got to make sure they know that. I still need to try to win.
Yeah, it's an interesting position, isn't it?
Yeah, they need to know the game too. So, like, you're kind of, and I find that happens to me a lot where, and I don't mind it really so much because I like to manage and make sure everyone's got a understanding, and I want everything to be fair, and I don't want to have an advantage over anybody and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting thing because the person learning just focuses on their own thing and just, you know, so it's just kind of, it's interesting.
Yeah, you kind of have to divide your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yep.
As a player and a teacher.
Is it okay to be the only one who teaches games in your group? That's an interesting question. I think if you're like me, it is. I enjoy it. I really do like it. I like making sure that everybody knows what's going on and it's fair. And I maybe it's a control thing for me. I don't know. I like to, you know, be the one that's in charge of making sure they know how to play. I don't know what it is. That's a weird thing. But if you're like me, yes, I don't mind. I mean, do you mind being, you know, that no. I teach most of the stuff we play?
Personally, I end up being more of the player and less of the teacher.
Yeah.
Or I liked helping the teacher if I played a game already, you know.
I think
sort of stepping in, but
I think another reason I like it so much is I get more invested in the game itself. Mm. And I tend to enjoy the experience more. Because when you're being taught a game, a lot of times, you know, you're just like glazed over. Like, what is happening? This guy knows everything. I feel like I know nothing. And
yeah.
When I'm teaching it, I'm engaged in it and I'm getting excited and I'm learning the game more. I'm learning how to play it more. And maybe that gives me an advantage in some games. I don't know. If I'm teaching it, you know, I kind of... It's like teaching anything. When you teach, through teaching, you learn it better.
Absolutely.
Right? And I
100% like agree with that.
Yeah. Like, I like that better in that way. So, okay. How does the experience of being taught a game affect the feeling toward the game itself? What do you mean by that? Do you think that's number 5? The experience of being taught a game affect the feeling toward the game itself. Is that kind of...
I guess what I'm saying here is that how does the experience of the teacher teaching the game affect your opinion of the game?
Oh, for the person itself. Being taught.
Yes. Like, you teach me a game. Is your teaching affecting my experience of the game?
Ooh, you tell me.
I mean, it could have an effect. If you don't grasp the rules or you don't get it, or like the thing you described before.
Yeah.
Somebody has a strategy and they didn't know that something, there was a rule against it.
Right.
And you play the entire game that way and they're... You find out it just debunked.
Yeah.
Do you really like that game anymore, or are you going to come back to it?
And you're right, because it's solely on how you were taught.
Yeah.
That could ruin it for you. Do you think there's something to the way it's taught, the emotion behind the way it's taught? Like, if I'm just like, so you score a victory point, you got a place to work here.
Does it do
anything to you where if I'm kind of energized and... making, you know, silly jokes and there about stuff, and
yeah, if you're enthusiastic about the game, and
does that help the person being taught?
I think so.
To stay,
it kind of pulls you in a little more.
Yeah,
you know, if you're low key and just rattling off rules, you know, line by line from the book, that's boring.
Yeah,
you're gonna lose them.
Right.
So to have some enthusiasm behind it, kind of
I do that sometimes. I'll make stupid little jokes, or I'll just teach a game in the nude, and you know, it just really throws people off.
It does, man. Not that I've experienced it.
Kind of to that point you were talking about before, can a great game be ruined by poor teaching? Absolutely.
I think so.
For that reason that we talked about before. And because like you said, does that person now not like the game? Because, or they're more apt to not play the game anymore because of the crappy way they were taught? You mentioned Alien Frontiers. Last week, Jeremy rated that game a 4. Well, not last week. Before we played it last week, he had it rated a 4.
3 years
You prior. Mentioned that maybe you were taught wrong. Or there were rules that were you just weren't clear on.
Yeah, it may not have been as much a teaching problem as it was just unclear rules explanation or not knowing the rules and teaching, having been taught the game without all the rules described. So, you know, if you don't know all the rules and things just didn't feel right.
There's a fine line there with the teacher's not telling you all the rules or with you're forgetting the rules.
Yeah.
Right? It's hard
not knowing them all.
Yeah. Like I rattled 20 rules off to you. Are you going to remember them all?
Probably not.
But am I going to remember which ones you don't know? Like, how am I going to know? So it's tough on both for both people. When there's a new game with stuff like that, it's good to reiterate rules that you think are little rules that can be easily forgotten. And that I learned that when we played Hansa Teutonica with Rob, like I should probably have reiterated certain things more than once when there's a lot of stuff going on, you know? And so I try to do that sometimes. And now again, I love this question here. Is there an art to teaching, and can becoming a good teacher be learned? Yes, I think. What about you?
I agree.
When I first started in the hobby, I was dreadful. I have a geek list about how I was terrible at teaching games. And it was, I'm telling you, it's all because of lack of preparedness. Reading the rule book once, maybe twice, thinking you have a handle on it, and then just going into it like, okay, here we go. So you want to win. So this is the worker placement game, and then you got these tiles that you try. So okay, so you're gonna start with $5. Oh, I didn't break the money out. Okay, so you know, and then everyone's like, oh my gosh, I just want to.
What is this?
Yeah, how do I rip my eyes out of my skull fast enough? But a couple, you know, that used to happen to me every time. And one of the guys in my game group is a rules, like he's a genius with rules. It's like he's got an eidetic memory only for rule books. You know, he's awesome at teaching. And so he was in my game group, and I played with him every time, and I just kind of like learned a lot from him. And there was stuff that I, you know, points from him that I took and applied into my own things, like a structure. And I think there's an art to it. You know, you kind of develop.
It's like a systematic.
Yes.
Approach.
Yes. I've personally, every time I teach a game, I think to myself first, okay, what the players want to know is how do I win?
Yeah.
Like, what's the goal? So I tell them the goal. Okay. The goal of this game, like I did Suburbia. So the goal of this game is to get the most population. Population is basically victory points. All right. Mm-hmm. So now they know, okay, this is what I need to, this is how I win. I get the most points, most population. Then I say, okay, here's how you get there. You know, so this is how, and that's all you're doing in games, right? Is utilizing the mechanics to get the most points to win the game. Yeah. So I tell them, this is, you know, okay, here's how you win. And then here's how to win. Here's what you do to win. Mm-hmm. And with those two things, I lead off with those two things. The rest of it kind of falls into place, you know, by telling them how to win. Then I go through a turn, you know, here's what you can do at your turn, this and this and this, and these things, you know, you get these tiles, they give you points, and that's how you win. So I think there's definitely an art to it, and I think you can definitely learn to be a good teacher. It's just there's, I don't know, it needs to click with you, I guess. You need to care, you need to want to be able to do it better, because I think there's nothing worse than starting a game night, teaching a game badly, and then everyone starts off kind of, and then the whole rest of the game night is just dull, and people are yawning, and I mean, that's going to happen anyway, which we'll talk about in a minute, but people are disengaged at the beginning, so I try to hype up the energy a little bit, and have a clear and concise structure. And again, I'll say it, it's being quick while being informative.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best thing you can do, you know?
Kind of streamlining your thoughts.
Yeah. You don't need to know every rule. You don't. You can look in the rule book if people have a question. That's not terrible. It's just you need to have a very, very strong grasp of the rules. Don't teach from the rule book. Have a good, strong grasp of the game. Play it. You know, when I get a brand new game and I teach it to the group, usually what I do is I bust it out solo. I follow the rule setup or the board setup and everything from the rule book, and I set it all up. And then I'll go through a turn or two as I'm reading the rule book. So then I'm getting a feel for the game, and I'll watch, you know, maybe Rado if he has a video, which he usually does because he has a video for everything. I usually watch Rado because that's a good way to get a feel for the game. He messes up rules once in a while, but you watch it to get a feel for how the game goes, and that kind of cements the rules into your head, you know, when you can see it live. And then
Having the visual of the game.
It's great. And then if there's something else that I find that I don't know, an ambiguity, I go to BGG, Board Game Geeks Rules Forums. They usually always have an answer for a question that you have.
Yeah.
And utilize those tools, you know, and get as prepared as you can before the group comes over. Then have the game set up before the group gets there.
Yep.
You know?
That's huge.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, it's great just to come in, and having it all set up is awesome.
That's another thing I learned from that guy in that group, and it just made sense. He's like, you know, he's like, I'm going to have a game set up, so the second you come over, I'm ready to teach it to you if you haven't played it yet, and then we can hit the ground running and play more games, because it's all about playing more games. All right, so that was to teach or not to teach. That was like the first chunk of questions here. Now this next chunk is called What's in it for you? So your first question you have is, why teach games? What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, why did you decide to teach games? Like, why did you decide to step up and be the guy, you know?
Yeah, okay. I think I can answer that. So,
like, what motivates you to do that? I mean, you've kind of already discussed that before.
Remember that relationship of owning a game versus liking the game? I think there's still part of that in me, and so I kind of have a narcissistic, play my games, please. So I buy all these games, and I invite people over, and then I teach them to you, hoping that you enjoy them, and then you'll talk about them, and this and that. And really, the main thing, I think, is to get more games played. Yeah. Right? So, and if I can teach them, and I can teach them quick, and I can teach them, you know, boom, 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 we'll play more games. And I don't know, I just really enjoy the whole process of it. I like teaching. I think maybe you have to have I'm not saying you have to be good at public speaking, but I think that's part of why some people don't like to teach. You know, people get nervous and stressed out when they have to, when the attention is on them and everyone's, you know, looking at you like, well, you better teach this right. And you feel like, right.
But I get that. I get it.
Do you?
Yeah, for sure. I've always struggled with the public speaking thing.
Yeah.
So that definitely hinders me from
the get-go.
Do you
not like to teach games for that reason? Does it stress you out too much?
I don't feel like I'm immensely stressed out, but it is something that I think about.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, everybody's watching or listening, you know, and it's just, it seems like there's some pressure there.
Yeah, so, for sure.
And I have gotten better, but
pressure to not mess up, pressure to not, like, are you afraid of looking stupid or someone's going
to
be like,
I'm afraid of forgetting what I have to teach.
Because you're nervous.
Yeah.
When you're nervous stuff just flies out of your head that you think you knew.
It's not that I don't know the material
right.
or the rules, but it just kind of evaporates slightly. And then it's, you know.
That used to happen to me when I was first teaching. Someone would ask me, you know, I'd be explaining the game, and then someone would be like, what about this? And I'd be like, oh. And so I open the rule book. And you probably all had this happen where you open the rule book and, you know, someone asks you a specific question. You open the rule book and you're not really reading the rule book. You're just darting your eyes all over the place, hoping that it'll just smack you in the face. And it never does. And it's like 15 minutes go by and you're just like, it's here somewhere.
Turning pages.
Yeah. And that's just, you're dead. You just want to kill yourself after that. But I don't mind public speaking that as much as some people do. Some people say that's a fear worse than death. You know, public speaking, it's a big deal. And I think, you know, to like and enjoy teaching games, you have to kind of either get over that fear or not have it to begin with. So maybe that's part of the thing too. I'm confident in that way. Where it doesn't stress me out. A lot of things do stress me out, but that part of it doesn't stress me out. So I think it lends itself well for myself teaching games.
I think practicing is a good thing. The more you do it, the easier it's going to get.
Practicing the game before you teach it, or practicing
like
teaching.
Practicing public speaking.
Yeah,
the
just
more
sit
you
in front
do
of
it,
a mirror and start talking about rules.
Yeah. Just don't look anybody in the eye. Look over their heads.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Oh, this is another great question. Do you think teaching games makes you a better gamer?
We kind of touched on that before, but I think it does.
It definitely does. Like teaching anything.
Well, you're learning it in a whole different way. It's forcing you to have a more in-depth understanding of the game.
Yep.
So obviously you're going to be
better.
It's
weird how that works too.
Yeah.
You know, teaching, like I find that even in my job at work, you know, I'll teach somebody something that I didn't think I was as strong in, but through teaching it, I understand it more. And yeah, it's definitely like that with games. And I think that helps you in the strategy of the games, and it gives you a slight edge. And I didn't really ever think about that until now.
Now I see it.
Yeah. Like, oh, so I'm not really that good. It's just that I keep teaching everything. Do you like when being taught a game for the person teaching it to use the pieces on the board as examples? So I guess what I mean is I'm teaching a game and I say, okay, so when this happens, you move this piece over here, and I pantomime that, you know, I take this piece and I move it over here. Does that help you learn in a visual way? A friend of mine said, you know, that they liked it when I'm teaching a game and, you know, I'll move the pieces that I'm talking about around the board, and it helps them. Oh, like I see now. I know what you mean. Where before they might have been like, I don't know what PC is talking about. What is he talking about? But, you know, since I pantomime that, or not even pantomime, I actually physically move it, it helps them learn. Does that kind of stuff help you?
Personally, when you're being taught?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, everybody has a different way of learning. But for me, I have the visual thing and the three-dimensional thing going on as an artist. So seeing that motion and, you know, the actual physical act of the game being played really, really helps for me.
Yeah, okay. So, does teaching detract from the experience as a player? Yes, in my experience. If I understand this right, I think you mean me as the teacher, does it detract from me as the player?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does, for sure. Because of what we talked about earlier, it's not just me focusing on me, it's me focusing on everybody.
Yeah.
So I'm teaching you the game, and I'm worried that, okay, does he know how to play, really? Does this person know? Does she know? Does he know? Do they know? You know? And I'm still trying to win and focus myself, but I'm also, that thing in me is, I want everyone to have fun. So, you know, I almost, like, take part of my mental bandwidth away from my own, you know, board or whatever it is I'm doing, and I give it to everybody else just to kind of make sure that the experience is good for them. There's nothing worse than everyone not having a good time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's more worth it to me for the group to have a good time than for me to do as, you know, as well. When teaching.
But I think after you get past the whole teaching thing, if you're playing with the same group,
that'll go away. That goes away completely. This is all just in
the first game.
Yeah, the beginning. Yeah.
Right, first game or two.
First game or two. Yeah. And it depends on the group as well. I'm more don't care if I'm playing with lighter game players, you know, who are non-gamers, you know, if I'm teaching them a lighter game, I don't care at all how I do.
Well, there's a lot less involved.
True, depending on the game you're teaching.
I think that what I have done before is given too much strategic help during the game as the teacher. You should do this. And then, you should really take, you know, not do that. Or
you think some players don't like it, or you think that's hurting you?
I think it can work both ways.
Yeah, because I know some people that don't like to be
kind of told.
Yeah, like, let me figure it out for myself. But I also know people who are like, ugh, you didn't tell me I could do this strategy, and now you've won, and I didn't do it, you know.
That can be a little gray area.
Touch and go.
Yeah.
Yeah. How does successfully teaching a game make you feel?
Personally, it's a victory.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this.
Let me cut you off real quick. What is successfully teaching a game?
When everybody has fun playing the game and it all works out.
Yeah.
They all get the rules and it flows well. It doesn't drag on. I think that's success.
Yeah, I do too. You like that. I mean, that's a high kind of thing. Especially for someone like you who doesn't like public speaking. Do you feel like you've kind of overcome an obstacle at that point? Like, I didn't forget.
You know, it's like, huge.
What I did,
And it's good to know that if you do a good job teaching it, and you like the game,
because
you're teaching it,
That
they're gonna want to come and play that one again.
That's a good point.
That's kind of a good thing.
Yeah,
I think. So.
Yep, I feel great when I successfully teach a game when nobody is confused, and I can tell that pretty early. Honestly, it doesn't happen at the end of the game. It happens at the end of the explanation. If I explain a game and then we just kind of, okay, we got this, and then boom, 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 we go, then it's like, all right, good, I did my job.
Yeah.
But if, you know, I'm halfway into the explanation and I just see people scratching their heads like, what? Then I'm like, darn it, something's wrong. I'm messing something up, and I, you know, it kind of bums me out a little bit more. Because I don't mind questions. Questions are good, you know, because there's going to be a bunch of different things that people ask. It's more if someone's confused about the way I'm explaining it, you know.
Yeah.
How do you feel about asking questions in the middle of someone's rules explanation? If I'm explaining a game and people are just like, what about this? What about this? What about this? Do you think it's better to let the teacher keep going to get to those questions and not be broken up with all these questions? Or does that bother you, or doesn't it bother you?
I think it's better just to let the teacher kind of go through it first, and then maybe some of those questions will be answered naturally.
I think so too. And then if at the end of the explanation they're not, I guess people just might think, well, I might forget my question later. I don't mind either way personally when I'm teaching it. I don't care if someone interrupts me and I can answer their question really quickly. But I think for most people they might, you know, want it, to like just wait.
If it's excessive, you know, maybe it might be an issue, but
yeah,
a question here or there, I don't see it as a problem.
Okay, so let's go to knowing your audience here. How do you know what games to teach or introduce to the group?
It can be tricky.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like with the group now, me, you, John, Rob, you can't go wrong with a middleweight Euro strategy game.
Yeah.
And I know that they're both going to grasp that and get it down and, you know,
yeah,
that'll fly. Yeah. I don't know that I'd break out Zombicide. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know.
Or if see what happens.
Or Cosmic Encounter. They might hate that. I don't know.
Is that good with four players?
Yes.
Okay.
Four players and five.
We should try it.
I think so. It
should be an experiment.
It's very chaotic and random. But I know.
That may be a good thing.
It might be. It really might be. I don't know. They might twitch in the way I twitch when the bevel of the board is the incorrect way with that one. I don't know. But I think that's very important, you know. Especially when you're teaching. If you're teaching somebody a game that they don't want to play in the first place, you lose.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's bad. Yeah. A buddy of mine was teaching me this game, Leonardo da Vinci. And I just really didn't want to play it at the time. And he was teaching it, and I was just like, ugh. Like, it made the teaching, you know, like, I didn't... And I felt bad for him afterward, because I was like, you know, he's just trying to teach this game that he likes, and yeah. I just was like, I didn't want to play the game. So yeah, it's picking the right game for the group is kind of paramount.
Yeah,
it's hard sometimes because you have games you want to play. I want to play this game,
but it may not be
be the right fit for the group, and you're just like, ugh, fine, and, you know, whatever. I guess we don't have to play the Cosmic Encounter again. But yeah, I don't know. There's an art to that too. I feel like personal taste, you know, of each player. There's an art to picking.
But I think
the game is
knowing the group too, and having played multiple game nights with the same people, you kind of get to know their personalities, what they like. You know,
that's what I
it
mean.
It gets like easier.
The weight strategy games for this group is
gets easier.
It's pretty good. You're right. It does.
And the groups can change too. They can evolve into different types of games, maybe that they like.
Yeah. Have you experienced the rules yawn?
I've done it myself, but yeah,
I know.
Have.
It is such a weird phenomenon. I mean, even if you're interested in the game, so you start the, you're like, damn it, I'm awake. Like, what's happening?
That's contagious too. Everybody else does it.
Oh, so. We just made 50 million people who are listening to this podcast yawn.
How do you like it?
Yeah, at the same time. No, but it's frustrating as the teacher because you feel like you're boring the people, but I don't even think it's really, it's gotta be a boredom thing. Like I'm sitting through mundane rules, you know, and it's kind of boring, but I don't think it says anything against the teacher necessarily. Cause it just happens naturally. Yeah. You just yawn and it's so weird. there's really no way to fix that. I don't think, I mean, it's the only way to fix it is to be the one doing the explaining. Because for some reason, I never yawn when I'm teaching. Because I'm all amped up and pumped to give you this amazing information on, you know, toi or whatever. But yeah, it's a weird thing.
It is a thing, though.
I know. Everybody, I'm sure, deals with it. And I don't know. It doesn't. But again, I don't think it means that the game is boring. I don't know. How thorough do you think you have to be when you're doing a rules explanation?
Thorough enough where they grasp the most important parts of the game, and some of the other stuff can be filled in.
I think that's true to a point. There's some games, though, where a little tiny rule you want to explain to them because that might affect a strategy.
Yeah.
And that's hard to always know when. But you're right. Some games, like Suburbia, you don't really need to talk about every single tile and what every single tile is going to do.
Yeah.
You just talk about them when they come up and you read it and say, you know, or Castles of Burgundy, you know, those yellow tiles that kind of do different things. There's like a bunch of them.
Yeah.
You don't need to tell everybody every one of those yellow tiles.
This one does this, and this one does this, and this one does this, and this one.
Do you got it? And then you just, every round when they come out, you just, okay, this round, here's what they do, you know?
Yeah.
But to the opposite end of that, there are some games where, you know, telling them, keep in mind that you can do this, and it might, the this might not happen too often, but it also, not knowing that might, you know, truncate or hamper your strategic options, where if you were to have known this little rule early on, you could have exploited it maybe. And so that's another thing that's kind of, it's game dependent. I don't think you always have to cover every single detail, but there are some games where you want to. I really do think that. So you just gotta, you gotta kind of keep that in mind as you're reading the rules and figuring out, you know, what to teach. Like, ask yourself, does this little tiny rule that I'm thinking about not telling them affect their decision making? You know, it's kind of a, you want to keep that, you want to be mindful of that, I think. What do you think about referencing the rule book during the gameplay? Does that detract, or during the explanation?
Again, we've kind of touched on that already. I don't think it's a bad thing if it's, as long as it's not too much.
Yeah.
Stopping the game
flow. I think
flow.
It's kind of a no-no when you're explaining.
Yeah.
I think if someone has a question, like we talked about before, it's fine to look at, because, I mean, you don't have to know every single tiny thing. But I think if you're teaching the game from, and you have the rule book, like, okay, so this is what we do. This is what we do. I think if you do that a bunch, you lose it.
Yeah.
I think it's a really important thing to not teach from the rule book or reference the rule book a lot when you're teaching. I mean, it doesn't really matter, but
if you
want to be the best teacher you can be, I think you try to know what you're going to say to some degree when you get the game out. And it's hard to do that, because like you said, you could know all the rules and everything, you got it down perfectly, but then everyone's eyes are on you at the beginning and you're like, I don't know anything. What game are we playing?
But I think a lot of gamers can kind of self-teach too.
Yeah,
you know, if they're on an off, you know, someone off turn, you know, someone else is taking their turn, they can reference the rule book. I've done that before.
And that's not a big deal.
No. And a lot of rule books will have a quick sheet where, you know, you have the information, the key information there.
For sure.
So it's, I don't know, it works out.
Have you taught a game before that has a really, really crappy rule book?
I've tried. Yeah, I've actually failed. Was it Colossal Arena? Worst rule book I've ever written.
Really?
Read. Like, I can't even teach this game.
Did you get rid of the game? What'd you do? Did you not play it anymore?
I gave it to Jason, and he got rid of it. He couldn't figure it out either.
Wow.
Yeah.
In a situation like that, I usually just go to the rules forums on BoardGameGeek.
There wasn't one at the time.
Oh.
There's nothing on it.
Yeah.
Because probably no one could figure it out.
Yeah.
There might be information now.
That happened with, are you aware of the game Myth? It was this very, very popular game on Kickstarter a couple of years ago, and it had these miniatures. It was like a dungeon crawly thing, and it was like this amazing, supposed to be this very epic dungeon crawl, and it was, you know, wow, what a cool thing. And it came out, and everyone was like, how on God's green earth do you play this monstrosity? The rules were so obscure and so, like, there was a million things missing. It was all ambiguous, and it just ended up, people hated it. I think they've since, done addendums to the rules, and they've updated them, and now it's not quite so bad, but a bad rule book can tank it, and you can't
do,
I mean, how can you teach it from a bad rule book? The only thing you can do is really go onto BoardGameGeek and see if there's anything out there.
Unless you know? You've played it already yourself, like, have been taught it before, and you know it.
Do you find that's the best way to learn a game? Would you rather be taught a game than read a rule book and learn it yourself? Does that depend?
Kind of mixed on that.
Yeah. Half in, half out.
Yeah.
Huh. How long do you think it should take if someone's teaching you a game? Is there a time where you're like, okay, this is getting too long? Is that game
dependent? It depends on the game, yeah. But I think at the half hour mark, I'm getting a little antsy.
Yep. I would say the same thing. Half hour's even a little too long.
Yeah.
Half hour's a long time.
Yeah.
I think 10 to 15 minutes is the sweet spot for most middleweight heavy middleweight to heavy strategy games. It should take, I don't know, 15 to 20 minutes maybe. I mean, it can obviously take a lot longer if there's a lot of things to explain, of course. There's exceptions to that, and there's, of course, games that take no time at all to explain. But I think that that's kind of like a 15 minutes is like...
Starting to
try
get
it. Not to go too much longer than 15 minutes. I mean, 15 minutes doesn't sound like a long time just saying it. It is. 15 minutes is a long time.
Yeah.
Unless people are all talking and, you know, you're stopping and that kind of thing. If everyone's paying attention to you and you're taking longer than 15 minutes to explain a game like Suburbia, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
It shouldn't take that long, you know,
yeah.
Once the game's all set up and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And again, having it set up makes it quicker. Because then you can actually give the examples of gameplay because it's already set up.
Yeah.
It's right there in front of you. Bam, bam, bam. This is how it works. It's quicker.
What do you think about giving people YouTube links or PDFs of the rulebook or telling them, hey, why don't you glance at the rulebook before the game?
That's a great idea.
I find that never works.
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
People may not be invested enough yet into the game to really
like, just
do that.
Teach me the damn game. How much work do I got to do for this thing? I don't want to play in the first place. You're already telling me what game we're playing. Why don't you just teach it to me, too? So, I don't know. I think, to recap, kind of, no guessing. Know the rules. Keep it short. Be as informative as you can. And the biggest thing I would say is keep a nice flow. You know, come up with a structure that you can kind of do, and like I said, I do for most games. You know what I mean? Is just keep it, you know, how do you win? Like, what do you need to do to win? And then how do you do it? Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
You know? Like, start with that. Because I'm telling you, I think everybody really... I've been taught games where someone's just going on and on, and I'm like, I don't know what am I doing in this game? What's the goal? Like, I always want to know what the goal is, so then I can wrap my head around, okay, you told me what, now tell me how. You know, if you kind of stick to those kind of things, I think it'll go better for you.
And using the terminology in the book, like, what is the discard pile? This is the discard pile.
Yes.
You know, knowing
Have you played Android
Netrunner? No.
All right, that game is... The discard pile is called, you know, so there's a different term for the discard pile for your hand. It's not just called your hand. It's not just called the discard pile. And if you just use that terminology and don't tell somebody what it means, what? Like,
hell,
I think your deck, I could be getting this wrong, is called research and development. So I'm going to make a run against R&D. It's like, that's just your deck or your discard or your hand. It's one of those things. But it's all that kind of stuff. It's hard. And that's a thing that people can get lost on, is if you don't spell it out, you know, that's another good point.
That's not that I teach a lot, but that's what I like to do is, you know, physically show the players what each kind of thing is on the table.
Yeah.
You know?
Sometimes I'll just touch it as I'm saying it.
Yeah. Like, you know? This is the score track.
Yeah.
You know, this is the turn order marker, you know, or
for sure.
It can be as simple as
for
that,
sure.
But
these are the spaces you need to go to get points. Here's three ways. Alien Frontiers is an example. There's three ways to get your, you know, ships or your guys onto the board, and that's the way to win. These three ways. This way, this way, this way. And you touch those spaces, and then it kind of forces the people to look at what you're saying that way. If you're just talking, they're just staring on into the nebulous, you know, and they're just like, I don't know what you're meaning. But if you kind of, like, focus with your hands down to the game board, they're watching you as you're saying things, and I think it helps cement, you know, ideas more.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I could talk for another 2 hours about this, but I think that was a pretty decent intro to the art of
teaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was that's it. So that's episode four.
Episode four.
Episode four. Come back for more.
Yep.
I don't know.
And thanks everybody for listening.
Yeah, it really means a lot to us. We have. You know, we're on Podbean is the website where I host, you know, the podcast, but you can get us on thegamecasters.com.
Yeah.
And that'll just basically link you to that. And there's a thing on there that says how many downloads and plays, and Jeremy and I are always like, oh, we got 10 more downloads today. I don't know. Neither of us know if it's a lot, or we have no idea. But
we're just having fun.
But it means a lot to us that however many
it does.
People... Even though there's like 270 downloads and 269 of them are me. no, but it really is awesome that, you know, people are seeming to care about and listen to what we have to say. So yeah, it does that is a great thing to say. Thank you.
Yep.
All right, we'll see you guys next week for episode boomf. That's five in German, just in case anyone doesn't know. I mean, most games are German, so I figured I'd learn that. Till next time, I'm Ryan James.
I'm Jeremy P.
And this is The Gamecasters.